Orion, I'm back. I know you told me to go, but I'm not ready to give up on us yet. Look, would you please turn around so we can talk about this like the adults other people expect us to be? Easy now. You don't want that thing to go off.
Don't I?
What's that saying? Make love, not war. That's a pretty good motto, don't
you? Yeah, pretty good. If the other person deserves to live and you don't.
Oh, baby, you don't mean that.
Oh, how easy, easy it would be to pull this trigger and shoot you like the cur you are.
I'm only half cur. The other half... You know, I've never really looked into the other side of my family. So what does that make me?
Worm meat! Which is what you're going to be when I'm through with you.
Hi there, and welcome to Random Access Television, the podcast where we discuss a TV show that's been picked for us at random by our vintage supercomputer that we fed the name of every TV show in existence into. My name is Zach, alongside my co-host Nas, as well as our first ever guest, Jamie. Join us as we watch whatever the computer has spit out for us. This time around, we picked the long-running, though now defunct, ABC soap opera One Life to Live. Nas, Jamie, how you doing?
Well, Zach, I am doing pretty good. I'm stoked to have our guest Jamie here. Jamie, tell us how you're doing.
I'm doing great. Thank you both for having me. Super excited to be here and to be talking to you guys.
Before we dive in to the meat of the episode, why don't you go ahead and just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure, absolutely. So I'm Jamie. So I am in Boston, and I run a Twitter account called TV Show Graphs. I am passionate about all things kind of data, television, psychology, just anything that kind of combines those areas. So I love making charts. I love television. It's always, I mean, growing up, like, classic TV meant a lot to me. I grew up on, like, Nick at Night and TV Land, so I've always been a huge television enthusiast. And especially even like recently, just kind of with all of the amazing television content out there, I feel like it's been just something I've been passionate about.
That's so cool. Yeah, we both Zach and I were checking out your TV graphs. How did you get started with these awesome little, was it just a passion for both, or is it tied in with like what you do for work, or?
Yeah. So ever since college, I was a math psychology major with like a visual arts concentration. So was looking kind of just for a way to combine all this, totally just a passion project. I've always liked just making random websites and playing around with different things and thought this would be just a cool project to allow me to kind of get into the weeds and just have fun.
Great.
I will say the only other thing that kind of inspired me. So yeah. I don't know if you guys know the show How I Met Your Mother, mm-hmm. character of Marshall. There's this whole running gag where he is all about like charts and graphs for everything. Yeah. And for some reason that like stuck out to me. And I was like, it would be really fun to do something like that, but more themed around actual TV. So I at first was thinking about doing it kind of more around like memes and just kind of funny graphs, but then mm-hmm. kind of went towards more kind of like data driven stuff as well.
It's amazing what gets you. Yeah. Like my current obsession with watching as much TV as I can was basically started because I have a job that involves spreadsheets. And as it turns out, I like making spreadsheets. That's pretty much what I do in my off seasons, now my off time now. So
I'll leave that to you guys. I, even though I do an enormous amount of data collection for research, I am not a spreadsheet person. Give me like the spread out post-it notes arranged haphazardly any day. So.
No, I can't do it. I don't even have a pen at my desk. It's all on computers.
Gosh, you're killing me here, Zach.
Oh, man.
Well, my desk is at work that I haven't been to in 16 months, but, you know.
Yeah. You know.
We'll see. The pandemic has definitely given us a lot more time to watch television, that's for sure.
That has been a big plus, I will say. So yeah. My life lately has been kind of work during the day and then disconnect for a little bit. Watch a few TV shows, few TV show graphs, kind of play around with things, maybe have a glass of wine, some snacks, and like That's my life on repeat in the pandemic.
You know, that sounds kind of like idyllic, though. I like that. And I like that you've done the graph thing, too. Like, I think that having sort of like a purpose for the hobby, having that goal, I love it. I think that's...
It's been just a fun way to nerd out. So, like,
cool
spreadsheet bit, like, I totally relate to that. Like, I love just... Sometimes I'll start just making a random spreadsheet, and I don't even know what direction it's going in. It's just like... something weird on a TV show that I'll notice, like something getting mentioned a lot, or a show with a lot of two-part episodes, or just random weird stuff that maybe is like, hey, let's look into this. So it's been really fun.
That's very cool.
I noticed the most recent one you had here was the Jeffersons multi-part episode.
Yeah. Oh, yes!
That creator, Norman Lear, he did so many multi-part episodes. Like, All in the Family had five-part episodes. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah. It's crazy. I love Norman Lear. Like, honestly, anything from that, like, 70s era, like, I am a big, like, 70s, 80s, that's my, like, golden era for what I like, when I need that nostalgia.
I love the especially, like, late 70s, early 80s, that very avocado and yellow time period. And Zach can't stand
I am a geriatric millennial, and so I grew up at the tail end of that, and so it just kind of reminds me of, like, going over to aunts' houses with cigarette smoke floating and yellow everything, furniture, and
after church,
the wood panel.
my dad actually put up custom wood paneling, so it's in the background of every family picture that I've ever seen.
That's funny.
I had to take it down myself a few years ago.
That's really funny. Wow.
All right, so we're gonna get into the meat of the show here. Sure. This is our history segment. So One Life to Live, it was a soap opera created by Agnes Nixon, a woman who basically changed what soap operas were and and had been since their creation in the early 1930s to what they are now. She was born December 10th, 1922 in Chicago, and she started working as a writer for daily soap operas under the tutelage of Queen of the Soaps Irma Phillips starting in the 1940s. Nixon started her writing on a radio serial called Women in White, and later, following Phillips, would work on her hit radio shows that later transitioned into TV shows Search for Tomorrow, Another World, and Guiding Light. Eventually, she took over as head writer of Another World from its previous head writer, James Lipton. Yeah, the actor studio guy, apparently. He was the head writer of a soap opera. You find out weird things all the time.
All right.
During this time, she tried to base her stories more on reality and get darker than the typical love triangles and minor maladies. For instance, on Guiding Light, she created a character who had cervical cancer. And over the objections of the show's sponsor, Procter & Gamble, she got it on the air, although they never said the word cancer. They did say pap smear, and doing so actually, you know, thousands of women later sent in letters saying, this may have saved my life because I didn't even know that this thing existed.
Fascinating.
So when she eventually got a chance to create a show of her own, she decided that she was, quote, tired of the restraints imposed by the waspy, non-controversial nature of daytime drama, and that her new show, One Life to Live, would, quote, emphasize the ethnic and socioeconomic diversity of the characters in its fictional setting. The show would be the first daily soap opera with a racially integrated cast, and it would feature some more different diversity, like having an Irish-American family and a specifically out Jewish character, one that wasn't hiding the fact that they were Jewish.
Interesting.
Yeah. The show's main focus would be around Victoria, Vicky Lord, a character that would last the entire length of the show, being portrayed from 1971 onward by Erica Slezak, which is kind of an awesome name.
Yeah.
The initial plot lines of the show in its first few years involved some more of the realistic plot lines that Nixon proposed, including a plot where one of the characters gets hooked on drugs and goes to rehab. And when she's in rehab, they actually filmed her at a real rehab facility in a group setting. So they filmed the accurate things. And another plot line, this is the one that's most interesting to me, with a long lost daughter of the housemaid Sadie. She was the one African-American woman on the show, comes back into town, but she's pretending to be Italian because she's light-skinned enough that she thinks she can get away with it. So the funny thing is they didn't reveal that she was light-skinned African-American for 6 months. And during that time, she starts dating another black character on the show, a doctor named Price Trainer, which is just an awesome name. This whole show has awesome names. During which the network actually got many angry letters about the interracial dating plot because they still thought that the character was white. But then after it was revealed that she was in fact African-American, they got more angry letters and boycotts because they did the whole plot in the first place.
For crying out loud. people are always going to be mad about something.
They are. Neither of these plot lines were in the first episode we watched, which is the earliest one I could find and might be the earliest one still existing. It aired July 11th, 1969, almost 1 year exactly into the show's run. So, ladies, what'd you think? Go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah, so this was interesting to me. I will start this with the caveat that I have not watched many soap operas over the years. So I feel like growing up, like soap operas were always on in the afternoons. It was either soap operas or game shows. And I feel like I always went the game show.
Totally same.
So it was interesting to me kind of jumping in and just kind of saying, okay, starting with an episode where kind of we may not have the full context, and I will be honest, I like check characters on Wikipedia a little bit to try to follow along.
I was a little confused myself.
But I will say I actually really liked the kind of shorter, and was it 22-23 minutes, the kind of shorter format. It was something where I could actually see myself, like if I was around in the time, just like getting instantly hooked and kind of wanting to keep watching.
Totally. Yeah.
The funny thing was, actually for the time, one of the longer soap operas.
Wow.
It was one of the first half hour soap operas. Most of them were 15 minutes before this, which basically without commercials means they were 12 to 11 minutes, depending on it.
And
the radio ones were 10 minutes. Wow. And sometimes the radio ones were actually 7 days a week too, 10 minutes at a time.
What? Who consumes? That's like, see, Quibi, before its time. It's like micro-dosing you with media. That's fascinating. I don't like it, but it's fascinating.
Yeah, the weirdest one of those I ever read about, and I don't remember the name, but it was in the late 40s. It was a show that was only 5 minutes long, and it was the end of every day on CBS. And it lasted for like 6 months, and it was just one lady on a phone call just talking to somebody else on the other side that you never heard.
I wonder if that was the inspiration, because on the show Twin Peaks, they have like this sort of running gag where there's like this short clip of a soap opera, like throughout, like it's not part of the show, but it's like on people's TVs, and they'll show like, you know, 5 minute clips of not even that long, like 2-3 minute clips of like, you know, I don't remember the name of it. Some Lynch person is gonna be like, it's blah blah blah. I can't remember the name of it, but yeah, that's funny. I had no idea. Fascinating.
This episode, it started out with an amnesia plot line, which if you're gonna go with soap opera parodies, and I'm sorry to soap opera fans out there, I know you're out there and I know some of you're gonna listen to this show, but you know, it is what
it is. Amnesia is a major plot. Was the guy's name Victor? Was that his name? Or
Edward?
Edward.
I don't know.
I can't remember.
Edward was the amnesia guy, I think.
Okay.
Well, that was the name that they gave him anyways. We don't know what his real name is.
Mentioned that it was just didn't remember. He remembered. The only thing he remembered was the Gettysburg address.
Yes, which they spent time the entire, what was this, 400 words of it, and they recited the entire thing on there. They
recited the entire thing. So, Edward, you did great, buddy.
Well, and let's see. There was a character in the hospital, and it was kind of interesting to me because they were kind of hinting at the guy that was in the hospital was hinting that the only reason he was into his marriage was because his wife was pregnant.
Right.
And they hinted at abortion, I think. Because there's a line where he says something like, you know, it wasn't my idea to do this or something. And it was just, I don't know, I kind of got that hint, which would go into that whole gritty thing that they were trying to premise it on.
Yeah. It kind of had, I mean, there was, what was interesting about this compared to the second episode, which of course we'll be talking about at length in a second here. But what was interesting about this episode was that it was very middle of the road. It wasn't super over the top. Yes, the amnesia thing, it was over the top. But the interpersonal relationships between the characters, kind of like the thing with the dad and the daughter who was mad about them going on a honeymoon.
Right. That daughter actually was the one who had the drug plot line later on.
Okay. Well, yeah, you got to throw in some wacky...
Well, it was because she was so jealous of her dad's new fiance or whatever that she turns to LSD and has a trip.
Oh my God, I wish I could have seen that. That's great. But with that said, it wasn't a super far-fetched plotline as opposed to some of the things in the second episode.
Yeah.
So, but I think what was probably most interesting, as what you mentioned before, is sort of the multicultural casting, which is always weird for me to see in black and white TV, because it was like the neighbor friend was African-American, Sadie. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't, you know, she was just integrated into, like, this is my friend, we're sitting, we're drinking coffee, you know, la-di-da. Going about the, you know, the episode, there wasn't any fanfare, there wasn't any you know, specifically political talk, but it was a political act nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, just as I read about, just simply having her on the show was exactly enough to get her banned from some southern stations. So
wow,
which is funny, because Dark Shadows is right afterwards, so they're fine with vampires, just not African Americans. So
well, again, we only have so much time here on our podcast together, so I won't get into that. But
so, yeah, I've watched, I don't know, maybe about half a dozen soap operas from the 60s and 70s, just one episode here and there. I did a couple of runs during the daytime, just kind of get the experience of an entire week's worth. And this was the dullest one I've ever seen, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys, like, if you have seen other soap operas, especially from this era, like, how you feel like it compared or anything that stood out.
It really put me to sleep.
Yeah, no, this was the first time I had ever seen anything approaching a soap opera from this period of time. You know, I wouldn't say I was riveted. It was a show.
Yeah.
TV show.
And I'd watched a lot of soap operas in the late 70s and then some primetime stuff from the early 60s. Unfortunately, most soap operas disappeared from this era because the network broadcast them once and then reused the videotape. This is actually the only surviving episode from its first four or five seasons, I believe.
And it was such bad quality, too, which is really sad.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Lost Media.
Yeah. No, I mean, for me, I just thought, like you said, the amnesia plot was just interesting to me, and especially there was a comment, I think, towards the end where they kind of almost like try to bring it back to reality a little bit by saying, like, this is quite a common medical occurrence about amnesia.
Yeah, during that entire scene.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, during that entire scene, I was just going, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. No, no.
This isn't like an epidemic of people walking around, like, not knowing their names. Like,
well, you know what? It isn't a shared soap opera universe. I'll get into a little of that, but it does actually have crossovers with other shows. So maybe in that particular universe, amnesia is a lot more common than it is here.
Maybe so. Maybe so. So
I will say, I appreciated that they at least were trying to bring it back into reality. I think that allowed me to enjoy it a little bit more. Like, it didn't feel like what I expected from a soap opera. It felt like a very dramatic 30-minute show with, like, a lot of cliches that honestly sometimes, like, are in sitcoms too, like amnesia. Like, I feel like that is just a classic trope, and like I kind of liked it. Yeah
Bonky on the head to reset you. I wonder if that's how they did this, but 3 months later, because it's a soap opera, so you gotta stretch things out. So after this was a pretty big success immediately. So after this, Agnes Nixon then went on to create the even bigger success, All My Children, in 1970. And there she would continue her social issue storytelling. She would address stuff like the anti-war movement, Vietnam-related PTSD, homosexuality, and even in the 70s featured the first on-screen abortion in American television.
Interesting.
She would focus most of her energy on that show, however. One Life to Live, the ratings started to decline in the late 70s, and the social-oriented issues became less and less popular as the 70s went on. So then things started to get sillier. Now, the show already had some silliness involved. Even with the one we were watching, the meek main character Vicky, who was not in the episode that we watched, had an alternate personality named Nikki.
Okay.
Who'd put on red wigs and go into bars and flirt with women and tell the other characters off. And frankly, it just got sillier from there. So in doing so, I have a book of, you know, soap operas, basically. And I kind of skimmed the soap operas from the other soap operas of the area, and they were not nearly as ridiculous as some of these plot lines here. So
really?
My favorite part of research was just sitting there like, oh, mouth ajar, reading the plot lines from the 80s and 90s. So there were island dictators with nuclear missiles. There was a soap opera within a soap opera. There was a plot line where Vicky starts to see ghosts. And at the exact same time, a different plot line where another character was seeing Old West versions of themselves inside the town. There was a plot line where someone got lost in the Amazon rainforest, lived with the tribesmen for a year while she had a baby, then lost the baby to the Catholic Church, where she had to move to Italy, disguise herself as a nun to try to get it back. And then there's something that I need to find out about. It was called Eterna, the Lost Underground City.
Wow.
HBO doesn't have anything on this.
No, just pure craziness. So a new head writer came in 1992 and briefly grounded the show again.
Briefly.
So it was more back to the standard love trials, some international intrigue, mixed with a social issue plot. So issues in the 90s, so AIDS and homophobia came up a lot. Mm-hmm. But also introducing many new plot lines and personalities for Vicky and the villainous character of Dorian, who is the first character we see in the second episode we watch in 2011. And we'll talk a little bit more about her, I'm sure, when we get to that episode. So in the 2000s, the writers would go in and out, and it continued its combination of socially relevant plot lines. So, for instance, the villain Dorian, who's mayor in the episode we watched from 2011, she became mayor by campaigning on marriage equality and gay rights, and actually married a woman briefly in order to become mayor. But
I mean,
so many kidnappings, alternate personalities, amnesias, people falling off of cliffs, etc. The second episode we watched was from 42 years to the day after the first one. This one aired July 11th, 2011. Okay. Jamie, what did you think?
Yeah, so I'll be honest. This one I had a harder time with. This was like, I feel like just a lot of the things about soap operas that I don't really like or that I stereotypically think of together.
Yeah.
And maybe there are some things that I missed or that you guys can kind of help me appreciate the nuance of, but I just felt like it was a little bit all over the place. And just even to kind of jump into it, it felt like it was just effort, kind of understanding everything that was going on in parallel and just ridiculousness and the guy with the scar, and it was just a lot for me.
Oh yeah,
there was so much going on in this,
so
and
much.
The editing was the craziest thing I'd ever seen, because no scene lasted longer than 90 seconds, so they just kept whiplashing from scene to scene to scene to scene. Now the characters never actually left the scenes. I looked at it, there was only one character who went from one scene to another. Everybody else was in the same set the whole time,
right?
Yeah, it was just like, okay, here's the woman holding a gun. This is what you heard at the beginning of the show, listeners. The woman's holding a gun. You can't see it, but I hope it's implied in the audio. To people talking in a bar, to like a detective in the squad room, to a spy lurking outside the window.
To like a maniacal businessman and his son, I guess.
Oh, that something? Son was the greatest worst actor ever. So maybe it's a Mystery Science Theater fan in me, but I was cackling the entire time, and I kept, while I was watching it, having to get my wife to come in and say, can you believe this?
Rewind
the audio. And
there was so much. I mean, from straight out the gate, first scene, this insane woman who reminded me of Susie from Curb Your Enthusiasm, except for she was like not as Jewish. But she just straight out the gate is like pointing a gun at her husband, and she's like, and he's like, don't wave a gun at me. And it was this whole, just, I don't have words.
Every single line that guy had cracked me up.
Yeah.
So apparently it was intentional. He was supposed to be the comic relief, but it worked. It really worked, because, you know, he'd just be like, oh, he's holding a gun at me. I don't know who the other side of my family is. Who knows? You know?
It was just absolutely bonko. I mean, and what's also, I think, as we're sort of recounting it, it is interesting that, although, and a subject that I've harped on before, the whole quick media, the idea of media in super small packages, is not a new thing. This is something like that, even though like we bemoan TikTok and the, you know, oh, everyone's attention span is only like a minute 30 seconds long, this show was meant for the TikTok generation.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I have seen music videos that had tighter editing. I
mean,
less tight editing than this. It was
right. Just, yeah. I mean, there was between the lady with the gun to the two women, and the one woman who kept screaming about the man on a wheel.
Like, oh, yeah.
What was she talking about? What?
Yeah, and I also thought it was kind of funny that the women seemed to be grouped by whether their hair was straight or curly. All the women in the bar had straight hair. All the women at the house had curly hair, or had that like early 2000s, like one curl sort of thing, you know, the TV haircut, they called it.
Right. Oh my gosh. Well, and then also, so the lady in the gun and the husband, they find a dead body in the bushes, but she's like, oh, I didn't shoot him. And it's like, dude, you're waving a gun around. What? And the detectives.
When I saw that, I had to watch it twice, show my wife it. And when I wrote down the audio, I'm going to go ahead and play the audio here because I just love it. I literally wrote down my notes, the greatest scene in TV history. Because it was just, I was just cackling up laughing. I hope that I was supposed to be doing that. So here I'm going to go ahead and play the clip now.
I know you're angry about the affair I didn't have.
All that pathetic refrain again?
It's the truth. Look, even if Ionia and I had, which we didn't, but if we had, which we didn't, would you really shoot me?
Oh, of course! Karma and justice after what you two had planned for me?
What are you talking about? I don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Don't try and lie when I've got the evidence right in front of me. Yes, I intercepted the Pandora's box.
Pandora? I thought you said it was from Ionia.
It is from Ionia. A package from her with a love note and this gun. What were you planning to do? Shoot me so that you could live revoltingly ever afterwards on my money?
Where are you getting this?
Well, so much for the best laid plans of sluts and men.
There were no plans.
Too late! I'm on to you now. Sayonara,
no.
Vicar man.
Dorian, please don't. Dorian, could you come here a second? Who the hell is that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the Mystery Science Theater fan in me who has watched way too many bad movies intentionally, but I love this. I might want to watch the next episode just to find out what happened, because it was just nuts. It was insane.
I feel like it was, yeah, it was just all, there were so many different things, like, and even just some of the lines, like with the whole, like, identity, I didn't even fully understand what was happening there, but the, was it Todd Manning? Todd Manning character, and like, this person can't be Todd Manning because I'm Todd Manning. I just felt like there was every, like, they were just going all out, not holding back, like, let's just go nuts here.
I mean, if this was just like some episode, like in the middle of the season, what on earth would the season finale look like?
Well, it's soap opera. There is no season finale. It just keeps going.
It just keeps going. Oh my God. Mind blowing.
I know. It's just, I was trying to think too to that point, like how it sustains, because there's so much drama, so much like over the top storylines. It seems like it's just keep going crazier, keep going more over the top, and that's just kind of how it goes. But yeah, I feel like a whole year, multiple years of this, it's a lot going on.
Yeah, and every single day at this point, it's an hour-long show, 250 episodes a year, because they take some time off for holidays, and that's it. And just, could you imagine trying to write a week's worth, let alone constantly topping yourself? I mean, I remember reading an interview with the creators of 24, and at the end of the second season, they set off a nuclear bomb and nuked San Diego or something. And they're like, how do we top this? But we got to, because that's what we got to do. And they had to do that every day.
I will say, like, I will say one thing positive for me about like this episode in particular, and just I think soaps in general, like I have a lot of respect for the actors and actresses who are like, in the grind and like this amount of output, and you think about it compared to like a network show that's maybe doing once a week and you get tons of breaks throughout the year. Like, I feel like these people are really giving it their all, and like, especially to see some of the folks who have been playing the same character for decades. Like,
that is
a lifelong commitment.
The character of Vicky, she was the one in there talking to the guy who was planning on killing his cousins or something. I don't know what was going on. She had been on that show every day with almost no break since 1971 at this point, 40 straight years. And
hats off. That's impressive to me.
Seriously.
I know. I mean, that's, I've never had a job that lasted for longer than 4 years. I couldn't imagine doing that every day for
four
40
years.
years.
Try 4 weeks over here. No, I'm kidding. I'm not that bad.
Hey, before I had this one for 4 years, it was 13 months, so.
Yeah, that's kind of in the ballpark, yeah.
But yeah, it. Random note also, at one point, so the two women are having the argument outside and they like punch each other and call each other sluts and everything. And my favorite part was when the one goes inside, she slams the door and the set shakes. The whole set shakes because it's so cheap, the set.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. Oh my God.
I just had so much fun watching this.
This one got you, Zach.
It really did. I'm actually going to play, I've never done this before, a second clip from the second episode because their performance at the end of the character doing a web search for origami cogs and not finding it was the greatest bad acting I have ever seen on television.
Did you mean Okinawa dogs?
No! I meant origami cogs! They're a real company and they're going after my dad. Why has no one heard about them? This job sucks. I'm out of here.
Oh, God. And the little search engine that they had to make, like, they had to create that. Like, the little fake search engine, like,
It looked like Alta
Vista. That was a good moment.
Yeah. Where it's just like, this job sucks, and walks down.
Right. And then the episode just ended.
Yep. Exactly. It's just, okay, we'll be back next time with our 30 scenes that are all 20 seconds long.
Oh, yeah. No, it was real. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, there's not a lot of things I can say with substance. This isn't like Saying Elsewhere. This isn't like Suspense. There's not a lot of, you know, I can extrapolate from it. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't racially diverse. It wasn't making any kind of social commentary, but it was fun.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that the one from 2011 had less POCs in it than the one from 1969.
Yeah. Right.
Although there were two in the credits, but they weren't in the episode.
They were not in the episode.
All right, so this was actually right after the show had been canceled. So, after 42 years, around the time the one we watched was being filmed, it was announced that ABC was canceling the show. The final episode aired January 13th, 2012, with a cliffhanger. A cliffhanger that would be resolved a year later when the show, along with fellow canceled ABC soap opera and Agnes Nixon creation All My Children, was revived in what may have been the first time ever as a daily web series on Hulu. Yeah, so this experiment didn't last long. Within weeks, they weren't doing it daily because nobody was watching. This was also 2013, so this was just a few years before most people had smart TVs or the ability to cast, so you'd have to watch it mostly on a computer and stereotype, you know. Older folks generally are the type watching the soap operas, so they don't, you know, aren't necessarily computer savvy.
Quibi,
sorry about
Quibi,
the stereotype, but it's true. Come on.
Quibi model fails again.
And also, in a weird twist, so when they canceled the show, five of the characters, I believe everybody in the bar, for instance, went on to the show General Hospital. So they like moved from their fake Philadelphia town to wherever the hell the fake town is in General Hospital. Okay. And there were some contractual things. So the new owners of One Life to Live were like, we can't do anything as long as those characters are on there. And then General Hospital killed one of them. And they're like, well, now we can't make the show at all. So they put themselves on hiatus in 2013 and never came back. The show was gone after 45 seasons, 11,136 episodes.
Holy.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, which isn't even anywhere near a soap opera record, by the way. Crazily enough. Also, a random thing, Snoop Dogg did the theme song for the web version.
Amazing. I might need to go listen to that.
I'm a little curious.
For what it's worth, that 14,000 episodes, is that what I said?
Something like that.
It's not the record. The record was Guiding Light, which was canceled in 2009 after 18,262 episodes, because if you include the radio days, because it went back to all the way to 1937.
Oh, my God.
So anyways, creator Agnes Nixon basically was still on All My Children, her other show. Yeah. She was briefly fired, not fired, but she left the position in 92, but then came back in the early 2000s and then brought it back to her social issues, including introducing the soap opera's first lesbian character and a transgender character. She died in 2016 at the age of 92, which means that she was writing the show well into her late 80s. So,
wow.
Yeah, good for her. Basically, modern soap operas and all their stereotypes wouldn't exist without her.
That's really cool. I mean, I don't think I had the cognizance that soap operas like this tackled as many social issues as they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
I agree.
And I
feel like soap operas, they do get a bad rap, but I will say, like, I maybe am part of it as, like, not a personal fan, but I do agree. I feel like there's kind of the, and even just thinking about, like, who soap operas are reaching, like, it's a lot of times, like, women at home and just, like, it is a cool, I think, like, vehicle into, like, that that whole audience and, like, exposing folks to certain issues. So.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
And just in doing my own research, it really looked like it depended on what show you were watching and what era it was. They were really era-dependent. In the early 90s, all of the soap operas were doing really relevant stuff, and I think they're doing them now in the COVID BLM era. But in sillier times like the 80s and the early 2000s, they were sillier. So they're when you have to create that much content, I guess you just got to keep pumping it out.
Very cool. Very cool.
So now this is our review section here where we give our standard A to F, none of that E like you weird Europeans do, A to F grades of each episode. Start from the episode from 1969. Jamie, what did you think? What would you give it?
I'm going to go B minus here. Like, I enjoyed it. I was pleasantly surprised. And I felt like it was grounded enough in reality that I had fun with it and felt like I could follow it pretty well.
Nice. Okay,
cool. I think, well, let's see. For the first one, I'm going to go ahead and just give this a middle of the road C. I thought it was fine. I like that, you know, it had, like, the diverse cast. The story didn't really grab me too much. It was just kind of background noise, but not a bad show by any means.
I'm going to, usually I give the higher grades than us. Today I'm going to give a lower. I thought this was a D+. This is the most boring soap opera I'd ever seen.
Oh my gosh! If you did
like this, though, there is a soap opera out there called Ryan's Hope. It started in the late 70s, starting Catherine Mulgrew from Voyager as one of her first things.
And Orange is the New Black, too.
I watched. She was the Russian girl in.
Yeah.
The Russian
yeah.
girl.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. woman in that.
Yeah.
That show was more grounded in reality. I watched 2 weeks worth of it. They have the whole thing is on YouTube. If you like this, that's a better version of the same thing.
Cool.
Now for the next episode, 2011, I'll just go first. As far as just pure entertainment value, this was an A. As far as quality, not. But as far as me just loving watching it, I just was having a blast.
It tickled your fancy.
It did. It really did. It just
love it.
What do you think, Jamie? What grade would you give this one?
So I was going to be kind of harsh on this one.
Okay.
I'd say D+.
Okay.
I agree.
Fair.
There were some fun moments. I think the like search engine bit at the end, I enjoyed that. But I had a hard time getting pulled into it enough to like really understand everything that was going on. But
sure.
It did have a little bit of the campiness factor. So I can see that.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of between you two. I would give this one, I think this one was like a B, B minus for me because I laughed. Again, I wouldn't necessarily call it riveted, but I loved the woman with the gun. She was great. She is a hero for all time. So yeah, B minus.
All right. So before we get going here and before we let the computer pick out what we're going to do next, Jamie, go ahead and let's talk about your Twitter a little bit more. Twitter and Instagram. What's the handle?
Yeah. So you can follow me. It's at TV Show Graphs. So no spaces, just TV Show Graphs. And yeah, thank you guys for having me. This has been so much fun. I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. We loved having you. It's so nice having a guest and somebody who loves TV as much as we do.
Maybe more so.
I love the enthusiasm you guys have, and I love the the letter rating was really fun.
Awesome.
I feel like I'm gonna have that mentality now, like every new show I watch and be like, okay, what is my letter grade?
Oh, hey, Zach's system comes through.
As somebody who has done that now for something around 5,000 or 6,000 TV shows, don't, because now I'll never enjoy a show creatively again. I was actually thinking today, I'm a little sick. I got a back problem, so I was on pain relaxers earlier today, and I was like, should I watch something? It's like, no, because I can't give it my full attention, which means I can't give it a rating. And my own self-imposed things is I can't just watch TV
That's
casually
crazy.
Anymore.
But then you can separate it into two, like the one I'm paying attention to and like the one that's just going to be a C no matter what because I'm not paying attention to it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I will say, like, it was really fun too. Like, this was not a show I probably would have, like, sought out to watch on my own. So it was a cool excuse to just get to do that. And I will say, this also inspires me. Like, I want to go make some soap opera graphs now.
Cool.
Like,
awesome.
Especially Zach, you talking about all of the different records and, like, the longest running. Like, I have not dove into that at all, but it's
nice.
I feel like there's a wealth of stuff out there around soap operas. So this is cool. Inspiration
Killer.
For that.
Awesome. I love it.
I can't not look at a soap opera and think how many thousands of episodes did they make?
Oh my gosh. Inspiration data. Woo! All right, let's go to the computer.
It's time to fire up our supercomputer. Not a sound effect at all. Let it get going. And it has picked for us our first cop show.
Okay.
It's the FBI series, Sue Thomas FBI, EYE, spelled, that ran on the PAX network in the early 2000s, about a deaf woman who works for the FBI. It's currently available on Tubi. We'll watch the first episode and something else random that we'll have later on in our description for the next episode. Until then, see you next time, Nos.
Bye-bye.
Yes.
All right, cool. Let me stop the audacity here. All right.
This is where we just get into the technical stuff of sending each other large files. I should stop the recording.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Random Access Television. And if you haven't already, please remember to subscribe to us on Apple and Spotify podcasts. We also love to read reviews, so go ahead and leave us one. You can find us at RATVPod, that's RATVPOD, at twitter.com. And if you have questions, complaints, compliments, recipes, email us at ratvpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Bye-bye.